years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Sterling on Sunday, a very special show. Our fight against football. Sterling on Sunday, enjoy.
Hear the dough, eat the dough. J.B. Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Selena and Steve have a stunning and amazing recipe for bread pudding, and I studied this recipe, Stephen, and congratulations. You have come up with a simple recipe, and for that you are to be applauded. But more importantly, when last we talked, we discussed the pricing of a special football dessert treat thing. And you were going to price it at $40. And I said, you price it at $40, no one's going to buy it. You need to price it at $39-something. And Selena feverishly agreed with me, as she often does, Stephen, which means that she doesn't listen to you as much as she does random strangers. That needs some focus on your part. How many did you sell?
Hey, Walter. I would say I sold about six packages of a dozen donuts and a T-shirt. So that's pretty good, considering it's a new item. However, I would be more than happy to take into consideration that $39.99 deal. However, the good thing about my product is there's no sales tax. There's no sales tax on that total purchase. So that's a good thing. Because people don't like to pay extra taxes. They don't like hidden fees.
You
and they
mean
don't
you
like
had
little charges.
Yeah, thanks for that psychology lesson. Listen to me carefully. You mean you were selling a tray of baked goods and a custom T-shirt, and the price tag said $40.
40 even, yes.
Selena, what happened?
Well, I don't know, Walter. See, I was busy with my first week back at school. So I wasn't really there to make those kinds of executive decisions. And I don't know that, I don't know how we, if we planned this out or what, it wasn't really run by me. But usually those go over pretty well, like the T-shirt deal, we've done it before with our regular shirts. And it's usually a couple people will buy them, but it's not like, I don't know, the Eagles is a little different because maybe it's more people would be interested in it.
Did you see the drone shots of Broad Street after the game?
I didn't see them, no, but I did see
a million people.
People climbing the pole.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
There were a million people.
There were a million people on Broad Street after that game. And you sold how many trays of delicious baked goods and a T-shirt? Six.
Well, we had a sellout. We had a sellout day. The T-shirts, everybody complimented how we were creative and were quick to the chase with making up a nice green shirt, Eagles colors. It says Let's Hunt on the front, the JB Bakery on the back. As soon as they won the Super Bowl, I contacted my t-shirt guy and got another batch made up because now they're going to sell even more. And people are they're really gravitating towards them, and I'm looking to sell at least a couple dozen, maybe three or four dozen this weekend. But people like to wear their own Eagles gear. I have people that come in with T-shirts and sweaters on from, like, the 1980s because that's what they wear every Sunday. They go to JB Bakery, they get their baked goods, they get their favorite, you know, game day treats, and they have their vintage clothing on. So it's a tough thing to sell, but it's a fun thing for us, and everybody's wearing one at the shop as well.
You're running a business, and you just told me that you're very happy that customers come in and compliment you on your creativity. And then the sentence ended. The sentence should be, they complimented us on our creativity, and they bought 10.
Exactly. I agree.
It didn't end.
I have to do
it
something. Maybe it's that $39.99.
No, it is that $39.99. And the price on the whatever you sell the T-shirts for alone, whatever that price is, you drop that by $5, and they'll run out of the store because you don't care what you sell them for. That is a walking billboard.
It's a beautiful shirt. I'm going to send you one, too.
I don't want the shirt. But again, you've fallen into this trap of telling me it's a beautiful shirt. Doesn't matter if it's beautiful. What matters is if it sells, and it's a walking billboard. You want hundreds, thousands of people within 20 miles of your bakery wearing that shirt. You might benefit from giving them away.
I totally agree. I did give away a few. And, you know, honestly, I really would love to see everybody wear, everybody that comes in without Eagles gear, they need to get new Eagles gear, and that I'm the place to get it. So I see cheap shirts on the at the gas stations for $10 because everybody's hopping on the bandwagon. But I get a really nice quality shirt. So if people are having a hard time, they can't even go to Dick's and get Eagles gear. So everybody's got to know JB Baker's got wonderful T-shirts with a great deal with donuts, and they can watch the game and, you know, take a great picture.
Do you know why they won't give you your coffee cups in a bag at Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts? Do you know why they give it to you in a carrier?
They think about that million-dollar lawsuit?
They think about these things. No. It's because they know that if they give it to you in a carrier, you're going to hold it in front of you and walk to the car, walk down the street, walk into the office building, and everybody who passes you will see that you have a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. They think about this stuff. They could give you a bag. They could give you a plain bag. They could save a lot of money by not doing the carriers. But they're like, no, that's really advertising.
That's genius.
Listen to Selena, okay, buddy? Just listen to Selena. You have the superpower of knowing how to get jelly inside a donut. Nobody else knows how to do that. She has the superpower of knowing how to price the donut. Because if you keep listening to you, you're never going to get the down payment on the diamond or the house. You need to listen to her to get the down payment for whatever the two of you fantasize about. It's become clear to me in talking to you. I'll give you an example. This is a painless example because it's about me and not about you. My dad used to buy a lot of radio advertising for his retail businesses, and they owned a resort in the Poconos. They owned Buck Hill Falls in the Poconos. And he used to buy a lot of advertising in Philadelphia and in New York City on the radio. And then at some point he realized, well, gee, I seem to know a lot about radio. And he looked at me, he said, do you want to buy the advertising? You want to try that for a month or two? I went, yeah, sure. And what did I do? I was a good radio soldier. I used the ratings. And I bought the advertising based on the ratings. And after about 6 weeks, my dad said, how are you going to pay for college? And I'm like, oh, what? And he said, well, if I keep buying advertising by you, we're not going to have any business left. So then I found out how he bought. He bought the shows and stations he liked. And he bought the host he liked, and he bought the stations he liked, and they did his commercials the way he liked them. And he had thriving, successful businesses. But if we had done it by cost per thousands or cost per points or some other jackass measure that worthless media buyers use, I wouldn't have gone to college. Therefore, think of Selena as your father.
So possibly take the T-shirts to where the customers are. Maybe sell them on the corner where people are walking into the game. I could do that. That's possible, too.
Yeah, but you won't do that. What you're going to do is you're going to pay a kid at Temple $25 an hour to do that. And it's got to be a good-looking kid wearing all of the merch.
That might work. I think that'll work.
This is exhausting. Now, the good news is that Stephen has come up with a great and simple bread pudding recipe. And I'm like, oh, okay, bread pudding. Until I read the recipe, and I'm like, this is clever. And this is going to taste great. And more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, Midnight Misfits, you will not have to go to the store to buy any of these ingredients. You have these ingredients. And if you send me an email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, I will send you his incredible bread pudding recipe. Top line, headline, why is this a great recipe?
It's Steve DeBaker's best ever bread pudding recipe, and it has multiple different kinds of breads in it. I don't like recipes that just have one kind of bread. I like using different kinds, like French and challah bread and Italian, or maybe a sweet bun, mix it all together. It gives it a lot of different flavors in it. I think bread pudding should have more than one flavor than just bread and the custard and the sweetness. I also incorporate another, like a vanilla sauce that could go on top of it. But there's also other ideas, like to be creative, powdered sugar or even like a honey glaze that could go on top. So people can have fun with this one. They could use leftover anything that they may have stocked up from when they thought that they were going to get trapped from a winter storm, because people like to hoard bread and eggs and milk. So this is a great creative way to use all that up and to enjoy something that could be great for breakfast or a dessert or a late night Midnight Misfit treat. So this is pretty clever, right?
It's a great recipe, especially since it has a separate vanilla sauce. And I would sit in the corner with that pot bowl of that sauce, and I'd probably eat too much of it. Steven and Selena, thank you very much for being on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by lesbians at the Super Bowl.
Hey, are you the Super Bowl? Because I think you're pretty super. I mean, bowls are great too. Hey, want to go out sometime? Oh, is that a sign?
Non-stop excitement. Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. As we drive across the country in our 18-wheeler, our 4-wheeler, this is the sweetest time of night. Sterling on Sunday.
On Sterling, every night, it's Florida stories. Florida stories. Alligators. Swamps, Billy Wiggins, Florida.
For Sterling Every Damn Night, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Thank you. Well, they have road rage Florida's stories in Florida. They're just a little bit different. There's a young man who is driving behind a brand new black on black Dodge Challenger. Ooh, it looks sweet. And he's a big car fan. So he waved to the driver in front of him and gave him the old thumbs up. Hey, nice car, man. And I guess looking in his rearview mirror, the driver mustn't have interpreted the thumb for the middle finger, maybe. Because this starts a road rage incident. Complimenting a guy on his car. What happens? He slams on the brakes. And the guy behind him has to slam on the brakes. So he gets out of his car. And the guy's filming. He rolls up. He walks up to his window. And for the crime of saying, nice car, bro, he gets punched in the face. This is how it goes in Florida. It's just a little different. They still have road rage. Just a little different.
You want to clap, you big tough guy?
I'm trying to tell you, nice car, bro. I like your car.
You better pay attention.
Yeah.
I just left the last beat in there because it's funny. Shouldn't that defuse the situation? No, the guy was insistent. He was already mad and he was going to be mad. Didn't matter what you said. No, I said I liked your car. Yeah, well, you need to watch it. So that's one Florida story down the drain there. In Florida, you can get in a road rage incident for being nice. Have you ever known a road rage person? Because it's like all like any other crime that happens out there. It's like 1%, 2% of the population is committing like 80% of the road rage incidences. And I used to work with a guy named Matt who was a road rager. He got in 3 road rage fights in the 2 years that I worked with him. It was like his hobby. I know. He did steroids too, so he's a pretty aggressive fella. Plus, you didn't really want to fight him because he was jacked. But he was jacked. He went to the gym and he was mad.
So don't mess with those people, man. Road rage is not something that infects me. I'm one of the bad drivers. I'm usually apologizing. They're like, oh, you cut me off. I'm like, yeah, sorry. I'm terrible. I'm a bad person. You got me.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Walmart. Sterling shops. Walmart. Sterling shops. Walmart.
Frequently at the largest corporation in the entire world, people will go and do penny ante thieving. And there was a feller, 44 years old, unidentified as this moment. And you'll understand more as the story unfolds. Apparently had an amazing hunger and didn't want to do what normal people do by paying for the donut. So he steals a donut and he eats it. Probably was pretty delightful because it was at Walmart. Loss prevention noticed, cameras everywhere at the Walmart. I hate to tell you this, but just look around. You'll see cameras everywhere. Police come in, arrest this feller, and find out that he's just loaded up with fentanyl and meth. If you notice when you go to Walmart sometimes, it could be first thing in the morning, middle of the day. It could be in the evening, late at night. There are a lot of people there who just are high. There's a lot of high people at Walmart. And I'm not talking about the associates. The associates are a perfectly straight and sober group of people. The arrest, according to the wonderful people at the Mount Juliet Police Department in suburban Nashville, the arrest is a reminder of how theft calls can lead us to other crimes, where dangerous drugs are located and removed from our community. Thank you to Walmart, your vigilant team. I'm just going to tell you something. You don't want to leave your meth and fentanyl like in the car, in the passenger seat. You got to take it inside the store. You've got to be able to go and do those things. That being said, it's best for you to deliver the meth and the fentanyl to where it's going. And you're going to get paid. Life's good. And at your local Walmart, you can find many of the ingredients necessary to make your own meth just at home, like brewing beer. For the people of Walmart, this is Philo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
Sunday, I look forward to hearing from you. You can send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I answer everyone. And please take a look at our website, which has all the details. Walter Sterling Show, Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by liberal women.
It must be hard to be a liberal woman because conservative men obviously wouldn't date you and Republicans in general wouldn't date you. And then it's like, liberal men don't even want to date you. Liberal men love right-wing women.
Sunday night in America, from Maine to Sacramento,
Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. And this is the best time of day to go to work, to be alone in the car, when we get our thinking done, when we don't fit in. Sterling every Sunday.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every band.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood.
How are you, Walter?
There you are in Los Angeles, which is surrounded by incredible stories tonight. What I noticed about the Los Angeles fires, and I wasn't going to let happen here with the plane crash, I realized when this started that I had not heard enough from people in Los Angeles about how they felt. I heard a lot of BS anger at the mayor and the governor and the $750,000 a year vice president of water. But I didn't hear a lot about how they felt when they looked at their lot that had the $5 million home that, gee, wasn't there anymore. Your friends, your neighbors, Mateus, how did they feel?
How the Los Angelinos feel at their disaster of the past month is one of first shock, dismay. It's hard to believe it. It's a sense of being removed from your own body for all people in the area. My God, what is happening? A sense of togetherness is certainly there, people pulling together with each other. That sense of sharing this communal shock together. But I noticed as we've had a few days now since our major part of the disasters here in the Southern California is that the second reaction is you start touching yourself and saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm still alive. I'm still here. Now, what can I do for somebody else? How can I help somebody? I think this is a natural human instinct. And somehow there's some beautiful sense to the human soul that allows us to put down every kind of difference and assist someone in need. I see that happen all the time in these kinds of situations. And not that one can be defined by the previous or the next. Each one certainly is its own unique experience. But as human beings, after the initial shock, I think our reaction is to first, oh my gosh, I'm okay. All of my body parts are moving. I have my hearing and sight. Good, I have my faculties. What can I do for the guy that's laying down on the ground next to me or sobbing despondently and uncontrollably, either because the sound was loud or any PTSD that might have been flared up because of seeing a fireball in the sky? All of these things are elements of humanity that really make us wonderful instead of separate. And you see it, of course, at this time.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood is in Hollywood. He has just experienced the horrendous fires on his skyline for days. Part of what makes an event like this so horrific is not just that a plane fell out of the sky and apparently six people died. What makes it so difficult is that it wasn't over there. It wasn't in a big empty field. It wasn't into the ocean. It was into the mall. It was into a popular, populist neighborhood of people like me who were just coming home at 6 p.m. on a Friday night. We don't get that script. And it has been my experience, and I say this all with lowercase letters. I'm not saying there's no Gandhi here, buddy. But I have found that if I can get out of my head, if I cannot think about myself for 60 seconds, if I can do just what you said, Mateus, and look around and say, how can I help you? What can I do? Our first instinct is if somebody is hurt or sitting on the ground is, oh, well, the doctor will take care of that. Well, no. The correct instinct, I believe, is I'm going to go sit on the curb with that person and find out what the problem is, what's going on. I might need someone, might know someone who could actually help them if it's a serious thing, or maybe they just need to sit quietly for a minute and a half and then they can get up and go home and they don't even want to talk to you. It doesn't matter what their reaction is. What matters is what I have done. And the result is I'm not thinking about myself. And as long as I'm not thinking about myself, everything seems to go better, Mateus.
Well, yes, let's put our fellow human beings ahead of our own needs at a time like this. It's I think it's instinctual. I don't think we actually have to tell ourselves to do it. It just happens innately if you're a good human being. But even if you're not a good human being, I think the surprise element of it sort of shocks you into correct behavior.
Now, when your president visited your community this week, he said the people who live here have to be allowed back to their lots, to where they were living right now. Have all of those barriers come down? Have your friends and neighbors been able to go back and look at their acreage?
No, because we've had incredible rain, which was so welcome. But as anticipated, there have been some mud flows and certainly a couple of landslides, some road closures. Topanga Canyon Boulevard, for example, was shut down in both directions between the Pacific Coast Highway and Grandview Drive last Sunday. Although, even though it's a muddy mess right now, they're telling us that all areas of the Pacific Coast Highway are scheduled to reopen to essential traffic this Sunday. And that's just, things are looking up, but the rain has caused some problems. Even a popular beach over here had a staircase collapse while part of the beach slid away around 7:15 this morning. And that's a cliffside that overlooks the beach, and it gave way to the sand below, destroying a staircase that allows beach access. So a little slipping and sliding over here, but certainly not as much of a degree of concern as what you're experiencing.
All right, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood. In Hollywood, life will get back to normal over the next few days. And one of the ways that many people, that I kind of get back on track, is I'll go to the movies, and that'll take me out of my head, too. Is there a movie that we should see this weekend? Is there a movie you recommend?
Yes, actually, there is. And interestingly enough, it's a story from the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that's a positive one. And so we need a little positivity. There's a movie called Brave the Dark. It's a real life story of a Lancaster County, Pennsylvania high school teacher, Stan Dean, who's played by Jared Harris, who is a wonderful actor. This guy, you've seen him in Mad Men. He is the son of Richard Harris, the famous actor, and his brother decided to make this picture. It's not a documentary. It's an actual dramatic story. Damien Harris directs his own brother and young Nicholas Hamilton, who plays a troubled student. He's been living in his car and attending school. He's haunted by a pivotal tragedy in his life, which causes him to act out and get into mischief. He's incarcerated, and this Professor Dean takes him in to his own home to try to help him. And, of course, the kid experiences human kindness and support for the first time from a positive male role model. It's kind of an odd pairing that eventually leads to a better life for both of them. And Harris is brilliant, and Nicholas Hamilton is very good, too. So this kind of, their performances really raise this movie above many others. It would be like an after-school special. But this is really a true story, so I found it to be a very good, positive story. It is made by a faith-based company, and so it's pretty much positive and pretty squeaky clean, but it's a positive story about how someone, through kindness, like people are experiencing, can improve somebody's life into the future.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, terrific observations. Thank you for the suggestion on the movie, your kind words about our broadcast. I'm grateful for your friendship.
Boom Boom Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Walter M. Sterling. I look forward to hearing from you. Send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by the demure trend.
The demure trend is probably my favorite trend to ever, ever come to TikTok, because we're finally calling people out for being in public, and we're bringing a little bit of shame back, because honestly the world kind of needs it finally. I don't think we need to be this nice about it, but I'll take it.
Sterling on Sunday, every damn Sunday. I look forward to sharing this time with you, because it's our time. No one's bothering us. Only freaks listen to the radio right now. Oh, what does that make you? Yes. And what does that make me? King of the freaks. Sterling on Sunday.
Lesbians.
We're best friends. Of course everyone thinks we're dating.
We are dating.
Well, yeah, but it's just for the bit.
Okay, but people are gonna get the wrong impression. Oh my god.
Sterling Every Damn Night. I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story.
Here's another story in Florida. This is not going to end the way you think it's going to end. There's a birthday party. And next door to the birthday party is a woman who's, how old is she? She looks 56. She don't look 56. She looks like she's in her 30s. She looks great. And the reason why that matters normally doesn't matter. But she disrupted the birthday party because she was butt naked. Oh, got your attention now. Wait, she's 56, but she's naked? No, don't worry. Look, that's not the problem. Actually, you would be happy if she showed up in your yard naked. And really, under normal circumstances, this might not have been a problem, except for the birthday party is for a child. A child's birthday. No, Florida woman. I don't care how beautiful you are. Obviously, you work out and you keep yourself in shape. You're kind of ripped. You could have done like maybe with a little more makeup or something. Could have brushed your hair a little more. But no, not at a kid's birthday party. Please walk up naked to the chain link fence anytime you want when there's not kids around. We're not going to have a problem. And then she did some gestures with a plastic doll. I guess she did something suggestive with, they're not saying it's a Barbie doll, but I'm just going to guess it was a Barbie doll. I can't give any more details because there's FCC constraints on that. But yeah, you were thinking, now women, you're decent human beings. You didn't have any cognitive dissonance with this, but the scumbag men listening to the James Show right now thought, oh yeah, a beautiful naked woman's walking up to the birthday party. This is a great story. No, no, it was not. I hope you learned your lesson. Before you judge beautiful naked women, you need to have all the proper context. In this instance, this was bad. I know it's obvious to women. I just have to explain it to men because we're children and we're a little slow.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's third installment of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Now, join lesbians in space.
You know, for a long time, I knew more facts about unicorns than I did about lesbians. Another reason I struggled with... there are no facts about unicorns.
Kim Commando. I have a lot of questions for Kim Commando. Puts out a newsletter that I've talked to you about every night for 5, 6, 8 minutes at a time, which is extraordinary amount of 50,000-watt clear channel real estate. And the newsletter I use to prepare the show, and many other talk show hosts do too, because it has top of mind today things that you and I struggle with, suffer with, all the problems that you and I have with the iPhone, finding a charger that works, finding a cube that works, finding a cube that has not been eaten by a random animal in your backyard. These are our actual challenges. And what I like about the current newsletter by Kim Commando is that it covers things I actually have to deal with. Like you, because you're listening to me, there's no way you could listen to me any other way. I'm a Mac guy. I'm an Apple guy. I got it in 1984. I've had one ever since. I'm the sucker who bought the Mac printers. Apple used to make printers, and one day the people at Apple were so smart, they said, you know, everybody likes the computer. Everybody likes their computers. Nobody likes their printers. And therefore, let's just deal with it by not making them anymore. But I have a lot of questions for you, Kim Commando. Good evening and welcome to a giant radio station.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Now, I have some questions about the current newsletter, and I want you to go over 2 or 3 of the articles that are in it today, because every time I say, okay, I'm going to demonstrate this newsletter with this story, and this story, and then I look at the next newsletter and go, oh, these are better. And then I look at the next newsletter and I'm like, no, these stories are better. But I don't want to talk about the newsletter yet. I want to ask you something really insanely important.
Okay.
I don't know if you can handle this because you're used to, you know, happy talk radio and people screaming at the Democrats and people deferring to you because you're Kim Commando. Leave all that on the side of the road. You have a home in Phoenix. You belong to a yacht club in Santa Barbara where everything's marked up 4,000%. You forget about your technology. You're a brilliant businesswoman. How the hell did you pull this off?
Yeah.
Are you on a speaker?
Hard.
Wait a minute. Are you on a speakerphone, a Bluetooth?
No. No, I'm on my earbuds. I'm on my earbuds.
Get rid of those. Turn off the Bluetooth. Right. You're just talking to the phone like a normal, like us normal poor people who can't waste $500 for things we're going to lose under in the toilet.
Oh, God. You know, everybody does. Hold on. Let me just turn off my Bluetooth.
Yeah, that's why I've never bought them. I'm like, really? You want me to do that? The child could die choking on them, the cat. Everybody could die on those, and I would lose them in the toilet instantly.
I know. It gets to be a bit of a hassle.
It is. You and I are talking to Kim Komando, who puts out this great newsletter called The Current. This is normal. You're on the radio. You should know better.
You know what? You're the only person who says take the earbuds out. I swear. You're it. You're the guy.
Now it sounds as though you're in the studio on a condenser mic. Now it's pristine. Thank you.
And I'm in my whisper room, so just to let you know that, too.
Sure.
All right, so here's the deal. Is I started over 20 years ago an overnight success. And I don't know if you know the story, but Frank Rayfield, I don't know if you remember him. He was at ABC. And
very,
I pitched him.
Very, very large man. Has that gotten dealt with? I wonder, do you think he's dealt with that?
Ozempic, maybe.
Because he worked for me. He worked for me at Sirius.
He?
Yeah, I hired everybody at Sirius. Made sure everybody was overpaid and owed me the rest of their career. Yeah, go ahead.
So I pitched him first on the Kim Komando show. And he told me that, honestly, he said that computers were like only for nerds and freaks. And nobody would ever, ever be interested in a show about computers and technology. And then I called Frank Murphy. And I said to Frank Murphy, and he's at CBS. And I gave him the same pitch. And he actually told me that he's been looking into the internet, and he's determined that it was a fad, and just like the pet rock. So nobody would have me. So I started my own radio network, and I've owned it ever since. I have no debt. I have no investors. The shows are on 510 radio stations. I have a paid platform, and as you know, I have a newsletter. And podcasts and YouTube and it's just been a fabulous ride.
Now, quickly, Kim Komando, give me one headline from this week's The Current. Today's The Current, and then I'll tell the Midnight Misfits how to get a hold of it. Go ahead.
All the ways that the government's spying on you.
Perfect. Stop there. Perfect. That's all we need. That's exactly the level of paranoia that my listener and I care about. I thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn night. Kim Komando, great broadcaster, great businesswoman, great friend. Thank you very much, Kim.
Sterling every night.
Sterling on Sunday. The demand is great. I have got more requests for some of these amazing features than you could ever imagine. I hope you enjoy them. Send me an email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling on Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Sterling on Sunday. While everybody else is watching a violent game, you and I get to enjoy really stupid stuff. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control, take shots.
There's Dave Scott safely in Canada, and it's probably 9 degrees.
It's a little warmer than that, but not much warmer. I think we're about 10 degrees right now, Walter.
Balmy. Are you having a good week? Do you have news for us? Do you have information and updates? You know, I had Ross Coulthard on last night, and you and I love Ross and respect him. And I asked him a few more questions about what looked to me like a, when you were a kid and your mother didn't want to give you one, but there used to be this substance. There was this substance that came in a tube.
Okay.
It was a plastic in a tube, and it smelled horrible. It smelled like a petroleum product that did not belong in the house. It belonged in a mechanic's garage. You squeezed it out of the tube, You put it at the end of a straw. A blob of it would be at the end of a straw. And then you'd blow into the straw, and it would make this colorful, large plastic bubble. And you tried to get it as big as you could, but your mother didn't want it because it stuck to whatever it got near, ruined the carpet, and stunk the house. That's what this thing looks like. When I look at the footage that was featured on News Nation of a UFO, and it's through like a fisheye lens at the bottom of a helicopter or a jet, and they're dragging this thing along, I can't get a ratio. I can't tell how big it is or how small it is between the fact that it's at the end of a tether, but it could be the end of a straw, my friend. And, yeah, so I'm not convinced that that's anything.
Well, you and I are on the same page with that, Walter. And, you know, the gentleman who brought it out, a guy named Jake Barber, he is going all in with his Skywatcher division now that is looking into all sorts of high strangeness with UFOs and what they call psionics. And I will tell you this. I talked to somebody last night who is a member of the Black Ops community, shall we say, and he is retired, but he still holds security clearance, as most do, just in case they are ever called back. Now, this person told me point blank, without going into any detail, what he does or does not know, because he can't tell me that due to his NDAs, but he was very, very specific that he's like, when is the UFO community going to wake up? He said, Dave, this is what happens if we have things in our airspace that we do not know what they are. We shoot them down. We shoot them down. We take them on out. We take any potential threat out. That is the job of the military. The military was told to stand down on this entire aspect of this drone phenomena. And the fact that we are still arguing that the government is covering this up, that Donald Trump's words through his press secretary is just another void in the story that they are trying to cover up because they don't want the aliens to know, I think it's a little bit ridiculous. Now, I know Ross's sources are saying that there was some anomalous objects mixed in with those drones that people were seeing, things that could not be explained, things that cannot be seen on radar. But here's the thing that this person told me last night, Walter, and I wanted to share this with you and your audience before I even share it with my own. And
yes,
that is, the United States Black Ops programs have technology that is 50 to 100 years ahead of what we are seeing in the sky today. So the fact that we don't even know what is flying in our own sky because they are such deep, dark projects that they're not going to release that to the public. They're not going to release the fact that, and this is my words, not his now, okay, they're not going to release the fact that they have technology and drones that are all different shapes and sizes with colors of lighting on them because they are testing out different programs for safety, for air safety, for any type of potential threat. Now, we talked on this show a couple of months ago where I told you and your audience that this was some sort of search going on because there was a belief going around that there may have been missing parts to disassembled nuclear weapons and that these drones were out there looking for radiation. They couldn't fly during the day because the sun's radiation would be picked up by these drones. So they had to do it at night. And that is why this drone thing is going on. Why it's still going on right now, I don't have an answer for that. But I could tell you this, the guy I talked to yesterday, he is 100% committed and into proving that this has nothing to do with UFOs.
What does it have to do with?
That's the million-dollar question. Are they still looking for nuclear parts? Are they still looking for other things? Are they doing some sort of testing that is going on? We don't know. They're not going to let us know because if it's a black project, they don't let us know.
I believe that they're doing some sort of testing. They're doing something with testing different types of equipment or aircraft. I do not believe for one second that our military is trolling New Jersey at night looking for atomic material. I believe, especially with things like plutonium, we're really good at tracking it. I think yes. We're excellent at tracking the whereabouts of plutonium. I can't believe that cover story. I would believe better and faster that they're looking for an alien body that was in a crashed UFO or that fell out of that bubble at the end of a tether, and they're looking for what was in that bubble at the end of a tether. I believe that before I believe that the United States of America has to troll North Jersey golf courses for atomic material. And by the way, if they did have to look for atomic material, not only do I think they would say that's what it was, they would have said it instantly to protect the population and tell them, this is what it looks like, stay away.
And you could be very well right, but the fact is, Joe Biden, during his time in power the last couple of months, didn't even so much as make a comment on the drones.
That's because he couldn't track. He couldn't read what he was looking at. He couldn't hold the conversation. He wasn't going to be reporting on anything other than where's the soup.
Well, that's very true. That's very true. You know, but I don't know what it is. What I do know is it's not alien. I wish the UFO community would wake up and actually see that if there was aliens flying into that area on a multiple scale, that would be considered an invasion of U.S. airspace. The military would have been called in. They would have taken them down. They didn't.
No. Dave Scott is the host of Spaced Out Radio. It's a terrific show, and you can hear all the episodes on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio. And he has a compelling website, spacedoutradio.com. And thank you, Dave Scott, because I have Spaced Out Radio merch. He sent me this amazing water cooler tumbler, the largest one I've ever seen, and a T-shirt, designed to terrify my children, which I wear.
Good.
No, you have cool merch. You did a nice job. It's nice stuff. High quality shirt, high quality cup, and I'm very honored to have you associated with the show. Spaced Out Radio. Subscribe to it, listen to it, like it. It's on YouTube. This is Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the bomb threat, 70-year-old security guard, and uncooperative school principal on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by Alice Eve.
Becoming weird, I think, as a result of being an actor. It's a weird making
job. You went
job.
Weird before?
I was just a girl before.
You've never been just a girl.
Sterling on Sunday. Let me know what you think. Let me know how you feel. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. This is Sterling on Sunday.
And now a weekly check-in with seasoned storyteller and broadcaster John Lieberman on Sterling every day.
This is Sterling every damn night. I'm John Lieberman. Sex and mindset go together like, well, you fill in the blank. And we have one woman here who can also fill in the blank for us. It is sex counselor and Dr. Kenesha Hall. Dr. Hall, good to be with you.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
All right. So what do sex and mindset have to do with one another?
So sex is an actual physical activity, but it's also much more than that. Like, it's hard to, as you would say, get in the mood if your mind is not there, because you actually need mental function to tell your body to do the things that it does and even to prepare for sex. Like, you just, well, sometimes you do wake up ready for sex. That's a natural occurring thing. But your mind, your body, and your soul are all intertwined and connected. So you need to be in a somewhat of a specific mental space in order for the physical part of sex to happen. In order to get the juices flowing, get the blood flowing, if you will, you have to be in a mindset of willingness to make those things happen.
So I'd imagine mindset is part of it. And you said to get the juices flowing, so to speak. So how can we have better sex in 2025?
Well, the first thing that I tell my clients is priorities. A lot of people don't make pleasure, actual physical contact, but pleasure. We don't make that a priority because we find that we think of it as selfish. We don't want to put our primal needs ahead of other things in our life because we've been trained to do so. But it is. It's great for your health. It's great for your mental health, your physical health. And it's okay to be selfish at times.
So speaking of selfish, I mean, is that one of the sex trends you're predicting for 2025? More selfishness in the bedroom? Or what trends are you predicting in the sex world for this new year that is upon us?
I think that's been the overall trend, not just in the new year, but it's been swaying that way over decades. I don't want to put the sexes against each other. I think across the board, men, women, and other, I feel like people need to, and I applaud it. I think people need to take a moment, a step back, and prioritize their well-being because I can't be of good service to other people unless I myself am okay. There's an old saying, I heard it from my grandmother, you can't pour from an empty cup. So you got to put something back in your cup. I think that's where we're trending. I applaud it. I just hope that people are mindful of prioritizing their personal peace and self-preservation in a time where things are just going haywire and crazy.
All right, so last question for you. I'm going to put you on the spot, but we are based in Philadelphia. So is it true that Philadelphians have better lovemaking?
So I actually lived in Philadelphia around 2003. I went to graduate school at Thomas Jefferson University. And I don't know if it's about the region or about the time and place that I was in my early 20s in my life, but I will say most definitely some of my best activity happened in Philly.
All right. Well, then we're going to take your answer as yes. Doctor, how can people keep up with you on social or your website?
So my website and social are all the same, DrKanisha, drkanisha.com, and Dr. Kanisha on all social media.
Dr. Kanisha Hall, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. This is Sterling Every Damn Night, and I'm John Lieberman.
Joy has been as in space.
A man just came up to me after a show and said, wow, I didn't know lesbians were funny, which lesbians are historically hilarious, by the way. And then he said, and damn, those blue eyes. So I guess he didn't know lesbians came in blue-eyed either.
Sailing every night, the car bar is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story from my days as a detective working in the NYPD's Auto Crime Division. So you see a lot of scams in the auto crime division. But one of the most ingenious ones I saw was a woman who used her car as bait in a fishing game. So what she would do is she had a Toyota Camry. She would post it for sale on Craigslist. And when potential buyers would come to check out her car,
She would ask them just as many questions as they were asking about oil changes and the mileage. She'd find out where they lived and their name and everything. They'd negotiate a price. She'd sign the title over to them, give them a set of keys, and they'd be on their way with the car. Well, what she would do is she would go to DMV and get a duplicate title, and she always kept a second set of keys. Then what she would do is she would wait a couple of weeks. She knew where the person lived. She'd go back with her keys, and she'd drive back to her house. Now, the person's going to come out and see their car is stolen. What do? They go to the police to report it stolen. She would wait until they reported it stolen. Then she would go to an NYPD precinct with the title. And she would say, yeah, I had a problem with this person, but it's my car. I have the title. And a lot of times, these cops, they didn't call the auto crime division to look into it. What happens? They wound up canceling the alarm for her. Well, her undoing was she had done this 4 or 5 times. She would put it back for sale on Craigslist. So what winds up happening is one of her victims sees the car that they just purchased now for sale on Craigslist with the same photos, the same phone number, the same neighborhood. They contact the auto crime division. Myself and another detective go to the house, and parked outside is this car. So we knock on the door. She comes to the door and she was, yeah, what do you want? And we said, do you have the paperwork for the car? She said, yeah. So we come out and she says, this is my car. She goes, it's not reported stolen, which raises a red flag because we didn't say anything about it being stolen. I said, I know what you did. You canceled the alarm. And she goes, detective, I'm a woman of means. I go, well, what does that mean? She goes, I got bills to pay. And I said, yeah. She says, and I use my car as a way of getting my bills paid. I says, well, hon, today you're going to jail. So we lock her up for selling her own car to people, and then they're reporting it stolen, and then she's getting it back and canceling the alarm on it. So that night when we went to talk to the district attorney, the DA was like, wait a minute, you're locking her up for selling her own car? I said, yeah, under false pretenses, then she's going and stealing it. So what wound up happening is she was charged for about 5 counts of grand larceny auto for her own car, which in typical Bronx fashion, I think she probably only got slapped on the wrist with probation. So for more interesting NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division. Lesbians.
There's some straight girls here right now who are like, oh my God. Oh my God. I played softball in high school. I was third base and I was really good. What does this mean?
It means you're gay. We're coming for you. Grab the Subaru. Let's go.
Your feedback always encouraged. WalterMSterling@gmail. WalterMSterling@gmail. Every email I get gets answered. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by sports betting.
So, it's okay for the MLB to make millions of dollars off of promoting sports betting, yet they banned Pete Rose for life because of it. Got it.
Sterling on Sunday. These are remarkable production pieces. I think they should win every Marconi Award available, and even that weird New York award. I don't even know what that is. From Maine to Sacramento, this is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, Rebel in Chains. The two guards left the room, slamming the door behind them. The remaining man crossed to the other side of the desk and chuckled. A very convincing performance, Amara, he said. You can get up now. She scrambled to her feet as fast as she could, with her hands still bound together, and tossed her hair back over her shoulder. "I always did know how to put on a good show." Cyrus paced in a half circle around her. "You look like hell." "Gee, thanks." She swiveled to maintain eye contact with him. "Maybe you should take that up with your crew, who made us go all the way through those disgusting caves for days before apprehending us and transporting us here to the ship." He removed a knife from his belt and used it to cut the tie around her wrists. "That's not my concern. Did you get what we wanted?" A sly grin spread across Amara's lips. "Names, locations, mission plans, everything you could ever need to quash a rebellious uprising." "Excellent." He studied her again. "And no one suspected you were one of us?" Her eyes narrowed, though her smile didn't fade. "Of course not." He drummed his fingers together in front of his broad chest. "Good, good. So, what now?" Amara sat on the edge of the desk. "Are you going to kill them right away, or torture them first?" "A little of both." Cyrus resumed his deliberate pacing. "I was thinking of killing most of them and then sending the rest back. A message which can't be ignored." "Ooh, I like it," she giggled. "We've controlled these planets for over a century. A ragtag team of pirates and mercenaries isn't going to change anything." He sat next to her. "You know, I was thinking, you could help me get that message across." "How so?" One eyebrow arched. "Make them watch you beat the crap out of me, and then I'll play dead until you kick them off the ship?" "Not quite." Cyrus brushed her scraggly hair away from her eyes. "I had something different in mind." His hand skimmed over her neck and down her body. He let it linger at the small of her back before giving her hip a squeeze. "I missed you." His growl in her ear sent goosebumps prickling over her flesh. She turned toward him, seeking out his lips for a kiss, but he pulled away. "No," he said, "not here." Amara settled for tracing the lines of his biceps through the fabric of his jacket. "What then? You want to haul me out of here and take me in front of them?" His grip on her strengthened. "That's exactly what I want." Exhilaration rippled down her spine, making her shiver. However, she wasn't convinced yet. "I don't know. We've never done it with an audience before." Cyrus's hand slipped beneath her shirt. One finger trailed along the waistband of her pants, dipping in to tug at the top of her panties. "Just think," he murmured, his breath dancing across her neck. "It will be so terrifying, so beautiful, no one will be able to take their eyes off of you. What better way to prove our dominance than by forcing you to submit to me?" Amara closed her eyes as he caught her earlobe between his teeth. Even after so many months of separation, he still had an indescribable hold on her. Her body was drawn to his like a magnet, and she didn't care what she had to do in order to have him. "Is it going to hurt?" she whispered. A wicked laugh punctuated his bite. "You wouldn't be satisfied if it didn't." Shimmering black orbs met her gaze when she opened her eyes. She leaned forward, letting her lips hover above his. Let's do it. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and this is an excerpt from my short story, Rebel in Chains, which is available at Amazon. You can also hear the uncensored recordings at patreon.com/Thea Landon. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share with me about what you've heard so far, you can email me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Shall we continue? Cyrus returned to the far side of his desk. He opened a drawer and pulled out a set of cuffs and chains. I knew you'd agree to my plan, he said, smirking. The sight of the cold, unforgiving metal sent another rush of adrenaline through her veins. Should I take my clothes off? Don't be silly. Where's the fun in that? He looked her up and down. Though maybe this would be easier without your shoes. Amara bent over and unlaced her scuffed leather boots. Once she kicked them away, Cyrus knelt beside her. He fastened one manacle around her right ankle, then moved to the left. When he stood, he yanked on the chains attached to the bands. She tripped, but caught herself in time. Perfect, he said. He straightened to his full height. She stuck her arms out and flashed a sultry smile. Grabbing one of her hands, he raised it to his mouth and kissed the pale flesh below her palm, right over her racing pulse. She caressed the stubble dotting his cheek and jumped when he snapped the next restraint around her wrist. The last cuff made a loud click as it clamped around her delicate skin. Knowing it would be the last move she made of her own volition, Amara reached up and clasped her hands around the back of his neck, drawing him in for a kiss. The tangy taste of his tongue filled her with desire. He was so close to her, yet she had to wait. Cyrus broke away and gathered the loose chains in his hands. I know you're going to like this, but remember, you can't let them know. Amara tried to capture his tempting lips again, but he turned her around. Let's go, he said. Don't forget to put up a fight. He pushed her into the hallway. Though the remainder of the apprehended rebels were contained elsewhere, she thrashed and screamed, "Get your hands off me!" When they arrived at the ship's prison, Cyrus kicked open the door to the large holding cell. Over a dozen men and women were shackled to the walls, Nico among them. "Scum!" he shouted, his gaze sweeping over the defiant faces of each of his captives. "We've had enough of your meddling. If you haven't realized how futile your efforts are, we'll be more than happy to keep delivering lessons." "Go to hell!" Amara spat on the ground near his feet. "You may have detained some of us, but the movement lives on. We will never submit." He grabbed her from behind, covering her mouth with his free hand. She struggled against him to no avail. "This was not meant to be a two-sided conversation," he said. "Perhaps your friends can learn from your mistakes while I teach you to hold your tongue." She gasped for air when he removed his hand. Her relief was short-lived as he shoved her to the floor. "Get on your knees," he said. Heat flushed through her cheeks. "No." Cyrus jerked the steely tethers, making her twitch. "That wasn't a suggestion. It was an order." Amara knelt on the dirty cement, but faced away from him. He moved in front of her, the tension on her restraints constant. Her arms twisted behind her back, raised at an unnatural angle. The sight of the bulge in his pants, mere inches from her face, took precedence over the pain. Without letting go of her leashes, he unfastened his belt. Oh, I think I'd better stop there before I get into a lot of trouble. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my short story, Rebel in Chains, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. And if you'd like to email me your thoughts, you can send them over to smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by lesbians at the Super Bowl.
Hey, are you the Super Bowl? Because I think you're pretty super. I mean, bulls are great too. Hey, want to go out sometime? Oh, is that a sign?
WGAN in Maine, KGFF in Coffeyville, Kansas, WPHT Philadelphia, that station in Albany, owned by Paul Vandenberg. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Our Power Daily. Sterling Every Damn Night.
You know what's so good about having Jill Brook on this show? What's so great about having Jill on this show is that she levels us up. She adds demure, credibility, class to our otherwise really questionable program. Jill Brook owns, operates, created a business called Flower Power Daily. And she saw an opportunity that most entrepreneurs had yet to seize, which is there's a tremendous appetite for interest in flowers, everything from arranging to where do they come from? How are you supposed to take care of them? The history of them, their impact on history. It's amazing what you have done, Jill.
Well, thank you, Walter. I think it's pretty amazing what you've done. And I think you could do a podcast, but I prefer you do radio because, first of all, you have a lot to say.
Well, you know, I've said to my wife, I've said, why don't you listen to my show? Did you hear my show? Do you listen to my show? No, I don't listen to your show. I hear your show all day in the house. And so some people don't think I have a lot to say. And then my mother, my Jersey mother, she used to say, not everybody's going to think you're funny, you know. And
I would disagree with that. They will. Not everybody is has your same sense of humor, but the ones who do really appreciate you.
The other thing is that I did about 200 episodes of a podcast when I started this. I think 200 is the number of people who listened, and they're a pain in the neck to do. It's just a freaking pain in the neck to do between the posting and the writing, the comments. I'm like, why am I doing this? This takes me longer than to do my show. And I know people listen to the show. But if you look at the math sucks. It's like over 1 million podcasts on Apple iTunes. You can name maybe 5.
That's very true. So there's so much attention on the few that succeed and literally hundreds of thousands that don't. I mean, even in the flower world, they keep on saying, oh, you should do a podcast. And I say, why should I do that? I'm on Walter's show.
Yeah.
I can, you know, synthesize the best news of the week and I get to have a good time. And then we get to, you know, educate and entertain your listeners late at night. What's wrong with that? I think that's the best thing to do.
Chinese New Year. And Jill, give us the info.
Well, happy Chinese New Year. It's the year of the snake. And what that means, basically, is that it's the snake symbolism is linked to shedding toxicity in your life, Walter, both in your personality and your character. So it's shedding the ego, letting go of the past, letting go of anger, letting go of love lost. So what toxicity do you want to get rid of in your life right now, this year, for the year of the snake?
Well, that's a very good question. I'd like to... there's an expression that some people are debtors and some people are under earners. Now, I am not a debtor, and most of my life I was not an under earner, but today I am. I need to get paid properly for this incredible gift to American radio.
I agree. I think that, you know, I think that all those super rich tech guys should really support creative people who work really, really hard and also entertain and inform the public. And it's really not fair, but life isn't always fair. However, that doesn't mean you can't keep on trying, because what gardens teach you all the time is that you never know what's going to bloom next year. So you keep on working at it, and all of a sudden there will be a surprise, and a great advertiser is just going to appear, or somebody will hear you and say, I need to have him in Minnesota or wherever it can be. So you just can't lose the faith. And at least you're really enjoying what you're doing while you're doing it, aren't you?
No, I'm miserable. But listen, the station in Minneapolis, in Minnesota,
yeah,
there are plenty of those. No problem getting radio stations that would want to air Sterling Every Damn Night. It's a question of the deal that would result in the monetization. And that's what needs the work.
Well, I think what you're saying is there's a difference between working hard and working smart.
Yeah.
And I think that that is always the challenge. But nonetheless, I have an idea you can do it. And I suggest that you start wearing red or have red flowers around you, because you want to know why Chinese New Year is always linked to red.
Flower Power Daily. That's Jill Brooks' business. Go look at this. It's a spectacular website. Flower Power Daily. Sterling Every Damn Night.
All news, more news. Day and night, around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Michael Ewing, James Copeland, thank you so much for airing Sterling on Sunday. You and I are driving right now. It's the best time of day to listen to the radio. This is a remarkable show. Of all of the stuff that you've asked for, I'm happy to share with you again. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling Every Damn Night, inspired by lesbians.
What fruit loves going down slides? A kiwi.
The one thing I know for sure is that you're listening to this alone. In the 18-wheeler cab, temperature's just right, the lights are exactly the way you want them, and miles to go of peace and quiet, and nobody's saying, well, would you pick up your towel? Pick up your towel! I'm Walter M. Sterling, and welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Now, join lesbians in space.
We're lesbian moms. Of course we're going to teach our son to pick up after himself. We're lesbian moms. Of course we're going to fight over who gets Mother's Day. We're lesbian moms. Of course we're going to be disappointed if he's straight.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night. It's Sterling Every Damn Night. Ah!
Hi, I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here with stories of living with our 8 kids in an old house in Delaware.
And sometimes we even leave that house and go to a restaurant.
More and more people are bringing dogs, their pets, into restaurants and other places. I'm kind of all right with it. But something happened this week that it's gone too far for
you. Also, you are not kind of all right with it. You don't like it, and you're not going to pin this on me. We're going to talk about this, but you're going to be honest about this and not play good cop, bad cop here.
Well, I don't know. It started with people bringing their dogs onto outdoor patio areas.
Right.
All right. But it has progressed, and I'm noticing it more and more. People are bringing their dogs, not service dogs, not anything like that, just their pets, into the indoor part of the restaurant. Why
right.
are we doing this?
And it's not even as if they're bringing their pet in and it's, You're bringing a furry animal with an exposed, pardon me, back end that just did its business outside. You picked it up in a baggie, threw it in the trash can with your unwashed hands, walked in here, wow. And then that little doggy poo sat its behind down in a restaurant chair, on the restaurant floor, in the restaurant that's supposed to be clean.
Tell them about the cat.
It doesn't matter if it's a cat or a dog or what, but this weekend I'm sitting and I see this little kitty cat with a leash come in. Okay, now, number one, I'm allergic to cats. Number two, the leash is long enough that the cat comes to my table.
Yeah, can roam from table to table.
Sits at my feet in a sneezing stupor while I'm trying to eat my food, but then they pick up the cat when they're done with their food. When they're done, they come and get the cat that's at my feet, pick it up, and put it on the table. Now, I don't care how clean you think that table is once the little restaurant girl comes.
What? The dining table?
The dining table. And no matter how much she's going to wipe it with her little rag, then she's got kitty cat poop schmear and hair on the rag. It's just gross. It's disgusting. And I see little tiny lap dogs that people put on the table. But the cat really got me this weekend because why? Why do you have to put your cat on a leash and take it to a restaurant to sit next to me so that I can sneeze?
If you have a comment for Becky, find her on Instagram, Just Being Mom.
And if you're looking for my dear sweet husband, you can always find him at the Dan Gaffney Show.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Just about 2 hours outside of beautiful London is a hamlet called Norwich City. And Norwich City has been very, very concerned about their jiggle joints. They don't want an expansion of their thriving jiggle joint industry. So the city councilors, they've gone out of their way to hurt our exotic dancers in England. So if you're on vacation and you like to go get a lap dance, Norwich, England ain't your place anymore. Here's why. When you go to the champagne room at any of the wonderful jiggle joints in Norwich, England, it's illegal for the dancer to get closer than 1 meter from you. A meter is about 30 inches. These dancers, how they make their money is not necessarily by dancing and disrobing, even though they make good money doing that. They really make their money on jumping on some jolly old guy's lap and doing some grinding. Caitlin Ward, 28, a veteran dancer of England, she said, "This is hurting the little guy. There was nothing toward happening in these clubs. Good, clean fun in the champagne room. But the Killjoys on the Norwich City Council, their crackdown is hurting women." What is it about government these days that's going out and hurting our women? I like our women. Protect them. Keep them safe. Lap dances keep families together. That's what I hear. Unless your wife finds out about it, and then maybe not. But it makes the man happy. And isn't that what it's all about? Happy spouse, happy house. Favorite dessert in England strip club. It's quite frankly the favorite dessert anywhere in Great Britain. It's called Spotted Dick. From the champagne room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. The cop on is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story from my days as a detective working in the NYPD's auto crime division. So you see a lot of scams
in the auto crime division. But one of the most ingenious ones I saw was a woman who used her car as bait in a fishing game. So what she would do is she had a Toyota Camry. She would post it for sale on Craigslist. And when potential buyers would come to check out her car, she would ask them just as many questions as they were asking about oil changes and the mileage. She'd find out where they lived and their name and everything. They'd negotiate a price. She'd sign the title over to them, give them a set of keys, and they'd be on their way with the car. Well, what she would do is she would go to DMV and get a duplicate title, and she always kept a second set of keys. Then what she would do is she would wait a couple of weeks. She knew where the person lived. She'd go back with her keys, and she'd drive back to her house. Now, the person's going to come out and see their car is stolen. What do? They go to the police to report it stolen. She would wait until they reported it stolen. Then she would go to an NYPD precinct with the title. And she would say, yeah, I had a problem with this person, but it's my car. I have the title. And a lot of times, these cops, they didn't call the auto crime division to look into it. What happens? They wound up canceling the alarm for her. Well, her undoing was she had done this 4 or 5 times. She would put it back for sale on Craigslist. So what winds up happening is one of her victims sees the car that they just purchased now for sale on Craigslist with the same photos, the same phone number, the same neighborhood. They contact the auto crime division. Myself and another detective go to the house, and parked outside is this car. So we knock on the door. She comes to the door and she was, yeah, what do you want? And we said, do you have the paperwork for the car? She said, yeah. So we come out and she says, this is my car. She goes, it's not reported stolen, which raises a red flag because we didn't say anything about it being stolen. I said, I know what you did. You canceled the alarm. And she goes, detective, I'm a woman of means. I go, well, what does that mean? She goes, I got bills to pay. And I said, yeah. She says, and I use my car as a way of getting my bills paid. I says, well, hon, today you're going to jail. So we lock her up for selling her own car to people, and then they're reporting it stolen, and then she's getting it back and canceling the alarm on it. So that night when we went to talk to the district attorney, the DA was like, wait a minute, you're locking her up for selling her own car? I said, yeah, under false pretenses. Then she's going and stealing it. So what wound up happening is she was charged for about 5 counts of grand larceny auto for her own car, which in typical Bronx fashion, I think she probably only got slapped on the wrist with probation. So for more interesting NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shops. Walmart. Sterling Shops. Walmart.
Interesting things happen at Walmart nearly every day of the week. All over the U.S. of A, and quite frankly, the world, because Walmart is the largest corporation in the entire world. Locations everywhere. Portsmouth, Virginia. Feller named Daquan Johnson rolls into the Walmart a little distraught and decided he was going to do some stabbing. Daquan just started stabbing random people right there in the Walmart. He was coming up behind him and stabbing him. One person saw him with the knife, and Daquan said, well, while there's still no surprise to this, I'm going to stab him anyways. Cops roll in. They pick up Mr. Johnson. He's asked, why did you do all that stabbing? He said he had family issues. Daquan Johnson, by the way, not the first time he's been picked up. Apparently quite a lengthy criminal history. Keep your head on a swivel. When you walk into the Walmart, you never know when there's going to be a random guy doing some stabbing. Most of the time, it's just shoplifting, or a lover's quarrel, or a husband and wife yelling at their kids, some mom counting to 3 for her child to come back. That's normally what you get. But because it's the largest corporation in the world, you never know. Because crazy people sometimes are the customers. Thank you, associates. Thank you for keeping us safe. And thank you, police. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
KMBZ in Kansas City. WPHT in Philadelphia. WGAN in Maine. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by Cher.
Cher once told me, if it doesn't matter in five years, it doesn't matter. And I was like, thank you, Cher. Truer words. God, I wish Cher had told me something.
Sterling on Sunday, from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern every Sunday night. We have been here for a decade. There's no accounting for taste. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control, Dave Scott. Dave Scott.
Mr. Scott, isn't it exciting that we've moved on from making Canada a state, and now we've gone to the Gaza Strip. We're going to make that a state. This is spectacular. There's Dave Scott, who lives in Canada, a Canadian citizen, an expert on UFOs, metaphysics, Bigfoot, everything that we actually care about. Welcome, Mr. Scott. Welcome to Sterling every damn night.
It is always a pleasure to be here with you, Mr. Sterling, and the Midnight Misfits. You guys make my night fun each and every night.
Well, and you do the same for us, Dave. But did you hear that news about the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, now that, you know, the attention is gone off of Canada and Canadians will no longer boo the American national anthem, you know, it is nice to see somebody else getting picked on for a little bit.
Well, if they boo the national anthem, the American national anthem, they will be deported to the prison off the coast of Cuba.
Yeah, Guantanamo Bay there.
Guantanamo Bay. By the way, would somebody explain to me how that happened? How do we have a base in Cuba? How did that happen?
Oh, I have no idea. I've often wondered that myself.
Isn't it wacky?
You're going to make me Google it. That's all I know.
No, that's right. But isn't it wacky? The thing worth Googling, though, that's really interesting is, you know, suddenly one of our departments, one of the agencies of the U.S. government was disbanded today. Just announced, okay, we're getting rid of this. And then all of these angry congressmen and senators saying, he can't just disband an agency of the U.S. government. That's an act of Congress. That has to be an act of Senate. Well, guess what? The person who created that agency, the wacky foreign aid agency, the person who did that, it was by executive order of John F. Kennedy. It was done by an executive order, not done by Congress and the Senate. And now the executive saying, well, okay, I'm done with that.
Yeah, I never knew it went back that far. You know, I was reading on the news today, you know, I didn't understand why that the USAID was giving millions of dollars to Canadian universities. We already have funding. Why do we need that?
None of the expenditures that were revealed today make any sense at all. None of them. The idea of promoting transgender surgeries in Uganda seems like a very unusual way to spend our money.
There's a lot of ways, you know, coming from a government right now that had a prime minister that used our taxpayer dollars as an open checkbook to spend all around the world, except on Canadians, I can understand why that this Doge project is so important. You know, I mean, we were doing studies all around the world paying for everything except for what we needed in Canada. And in fact, what they were doing was handicapping Canadian companies in order to create more tax revenue by shutting them down and making them go into different directions. And it was absolutely ridiculous to watch it happen because, give you an example, with Trudeau, in the last 9 years as prime minister, he has spent more or created more debt than every other prime minister in Canadian history combined.
Wow.
And he over doubled it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have UFO news?
I do not have UFO news for you. I know you're going to be disappointed in that.
No. Let me be clear. Every time you come on, I don't know how you do it, but you have a new piece of information about something in which we have great interest. You have never disappointed me. If you don't have UFO news, you got something else, Dave Scott.
I do, because a good friend of mine, Lon Strickler, he has a great website called phantomsandmonsters.com. Okay, where people just like you and me and your listeners well, or our listeners, I should say, are able to, you know, report their stories of what they saw. Well, apparently, in Pisgah National Forest in North Carolina, along the Appalachian Trail, there was a hiker walking around this trail doing his thing where he came across a winged humanoid.
Of course
now,
he did.
A lot of people would recognize this type of creature from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where back in 1966 to 1967, a creature called the Mothman, a winged humanoid, was flying around terrorizing people, and people believed that this was a harbinger of death that eventually led to the collapse of the Silver Bridge. I'm sure you remember that incident, Walter.
No.
Oh, wow. Like 30-some people died on that.
I'm sorry to hear that. Where was the bridge? Please explain.
That was in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Right.
In 1967, when the bridge collapsed.
Jeez.
Okay. So this hiker says this happened a couple of years ago where he was out camping, you know, doing his thing in the greater Yellowstone region. And all of a sudden, as he was walking around, he sees this creature. He said it was starting to freak him out because he started hearing noises all around him, like clicking and you know when a bird flies by you and you hear the wings kind of flapping. He was hearing all this, and he started to get a little worried along the trail until he was finally able to see about a 6-7 foot tall creature just standing there on one of these tree limbs, hanging out and staring back down at him. Now, he did what anybody would do. He slowly backed away, and then when he got out of the creature's sight, he started to take off. He ended up reaching a ranger station to try and report it and to get safe, but the ranger station was closed. He was ready to break in. He was so distraught, thinking that this creature was going to be following him, but thankfully it didn't. And he hasn't opened up about this story until he reported it on phantomsandmonsters.com.
Did he ever see that, or did he ever see any evidence that what he saw was true?
Well, the only evidence that he had was his eyewitness sighting, okay, of the creature sitting in a tree, hanging from the branches. I mean, but all the noises he felt that, you know, as he was trying to get away, he was so scared that this creature was following him that he was panicking, just running for his life.
But you figure that a creature that size may have left claw marks in the tree or branches, came down, some physical evidence. Isn't that possible?
It could have been. It could very well have been.
And you when know? Was I mean, this? But, how long? Oh, this was in what, 60? What'd you say, 67?
No. This recent incident happened about 2 years ago, two, three years ago.
Got it.
Yeah. And the report just came down earlier today.
Where can I see the report?
You can go to phantomsandmonsters.com, and it is a free site that my good friend Lon Strickler puts out there in order to claim any monster sighting that people have. And he vets the people, he interviews the people to try and get a better story of what actually happened. And if you have a weird story, I highly suggest you report it to Lon.
What's the name of that website again? That sounds really fun.
Phantomsandmonsters.com.
Phantomsandmonsters.com. And then there's Dave Scott. How do we hear your great radio show?
Always at spacedoutradio.com or on YouTube, Walter.
Where he has spectacular merch, great drinking containers, beautiful T-shirts. spacedoutradio.com. I'm Walter M. Sterling with Dave Scott, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Now, join the lesbians in space.
Hey, you know what the drum set said when he fell off a cliff? But he probably said ouch, too. He probably hurt a little.
All of your complaints are welcome. Send them to George Norrie, care of this radio station. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's Sunday night in America, and this is Sterling on Sunday.
You
get a bang out of listening to Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by the truth.
But trust me, in the future, you'll be much happier if you always tell me the truth.
Wait. I'll be happier?
Well, you don't think I could make you happy if I wanted to?
This is the truth. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
You're cute. I like you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sterling on Sunday, a radio show designed to take you from the horrors of having to be with your family on the weekend to the joy of the peace and solitude of going to work on Monday morning. There's no other show like it because there's absolutely no money in this, and therefore no radio station wants to deal with it. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with Thea Landon.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Fire Beyond the Frost. The water shut off, and Sari appeared in the room moments later. Rather than sitting down, she leaned against the doorframe with her arms folded. Comfortable? Yes. Good. I want to clear up one thing before our evening progresses. Catalina raised an eyebrow. I know you're coming out of a relationship with that jerk of a doctor, and the charity group sent you to what can seem like a pretty miserable place sometimes. Her dark eyes shone in the wan lighting. But I don't want you to be here because there's nothing else available and you're lonely. I want you to want me for me. The demand slithered out from between her plump lips. Catalina's gaze traveled from her inquisitive facade down the line of her neck. The top two buttons of her shirt were unfastened, allowing the flimsy material to fall open just enough to hint at what lay underneath. Even with her arms crossed in front of her, there was no camouflaging the pronounced curves of her body. Most importantly, beneath the pretty package beat the heart of the compassionate nurse whose caring nature extended to everyone who crossed her path. She swallowed back her usual inhibition and tried to erase any lingering doubts. I do want you. Sari closed the distance between them and sat beside her on the couch. That's all I needed to hear, she murmured. Her fingertips grazed Catalina's cheek with the lightest of touches. After letting her fingers travel down the side of her face, Sari cupped her chin and guided it toward her. Catalina closed her eyes and trembled. The cushion of Sari's lips was as warm and seductive as she'd remembered, and she sank into the luxurious kiss. Sari's tongue delved into her mouth, eliciting another shiver. Their playful exploration gave way to more as she nudged her backward against the side of the sofa, circling an arm around her waist. She draped her hands over Sari's shoulders, feeling the weight of the other woman against her chest. Her pulse pounded in her ears as their sensual kiss left her breathless. One of Sari's hands slipped inside her sweater, caressing her side from the edge of her bra to the top of her pants. She squirmed at the arousing sensations, and her hips lifted off the couch toward her partner as if they had a mind of their own. Luscious lips broke away from her mouth and traveled down her neck. Catalina's breath caught in her throat as teeth skimmed across the delicate skin over her collarbone. Sari pushed aside the collar of her shirt to continue along her tantalizing path. Before she got very far, she rested her forehead on the arm of the couch and sighed. "I'm sorry," she mumbled into the upholstery. "I didn't want to rush things tonight, but you don't want to know how long it's been since I've had a living, breathing woman here with me. It's okay." After a split second of shy hesitation, Catalina stroked her hair, letting her fingers tangle in the messy waves. "I don't want you to stop." The overstuffed furniture muffled Sari's pained groan. "I swear, I am moments away from dragging you into my bedroom and not letting you go until you're screaming my name." Her words sent sparks shooting straight between Catalina's legs. She swallowed, still trying to catch her breath and maintain some semblance of composure. "I did say I wanted you, didn't I?" "True." She bounced into a standing position and hauled Catalina to her feet. Without letting go of her hand, she pulled her close, their faces mere inches apart. "Whenever you're ready, follow me." Catalina watched her walk down the hallway, satin-covered hips swaying suggestively. A tsunami of varying thoughts crashed through her mind in violent waves. She couldn't think straight or breathe with the reminder of Sari's hands haunting her body. The heat emanating from the hearth seemed to make her sweater cling to her thin frame, constricting her lungs. Something had to give. "Unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight. But you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Fire Beyond the Frost, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
I hope your team won, but mostly I hope you won the bets, which is the whole point of that game. I don't understand it. But then again, I'm a bowler. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and the name of the show is Sterling on Sunday. I'll be back next week for Nonsense, Sterling on Sunday.
And I love this week's Walter Sterling Show. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it so.
Join us next week at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for another Walter Sterling Show.
My classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Join us next week at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for another Walter Sterling Show.
Next Sunday, all right? Right. Stay bright.